Welcome all of you fellow arcanists out there to the Frith Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you have not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab a copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back.
With the Sovereign Dragon Tourney rapidly approaching, the apprentice's training is interrupted by a Reaper Arcanist of the Hunter's Guild, eager to use the tourney as an excuse to add Master Zelfry's name to his Reaper's list of kills. Unfortunately for the Reaper Arcanist, Zelfry hasn't entered the tourney, so instead the Reaper Arcanist will have to content himself with a proxy battle against Volk and the other apprentices. The apprentice tourney is starting to take a serious turn. But before we get into the book, let's take a look at a piece of advice from the series. Step 37 on the Pillar of Ruma says compassion. Without it, we make the world a crueler place. With that, let's join Eric and Scott for chapters 21 through 25 of Colosseum Arcanist.
Hello, and welcome back to the Frith Guild podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
And I'm co-host Scott.
And today we'll be diving on into chapters 21 through 25 of Colosseum Arcanist. Before we get started today, I do want to make mention, and I want to thank everybody for listening, and would also like to ask that you show us some love by liking, commenting, sharing, rating, whatever you're listening on. Just shows us we're doing a good job, and we want to make mention that the Frith Chronicles wiki link is in the description along with the link for the Capital Station Discord server. So that way you can go on over there and join in on the conversation. And with that, we'll jump on into chapter 21.
Awesome. Chapter 21, the rules of combat, opens up with Volk and Zelfry having a discussion about the rune stones and how the thief is going to get them. Zelfry's of the mind that they shouldn't tell the queen because she's already autocratic and she will try and dictate who bonds with them. And that will probably not benefit the broader world. And part of their plan to figure this out is to use the gala, which is where he expects something to happen. And his plan is to mimic Adelgis so that he can actually go around the gala, read everyone's thoughts, and try and figure out who's the thief and who's just a regular arcanist. Volk starts to get some sparring practice with Zelfry. And the one positive that he starts to notice is that his second bonding magic isn't hurting as much. So this is something we've seen throughout the books. He's slowly becoming more and more connected, for lack of a better term. So his magic is hurting him less and less. He's able to use it for longer periods of time, which is very helpful. The big piece of the sparring that they get into is Zelfry starts to teach Volk about using information to his advantage. When they spar, Volk uses this and notices Zelfry has a foot injury. So when he's sparring, he kind of forces Zelfry to put his weight on it, ends up cutting his tunic and revealing a bunch of scars on his body.
I was kind of curious, like, why did Volk decide to cut his shirt and his tunic? And, like, what was he trying to accomplish out of that?
I'm not sure. It seemed almost like he was teasing him, which is usually something the master does to the apprentice. So this feels like it would have just pissed Zelfry off. But it seems to have worked, and he at least felt good that he was making contact. The next part, he actually does make a lot bigger contact. He forces Zelfry to really pivot off that back foot and is able to cut his arm, which is something he's never done before. So he has a small little victory there in his sparring.
You know, of all the things, Volk is like the fastest learner when it comes to combat and learning his magic, that kind of thing. Like, granted, it took him a while to get the augmentation figured out or be able to pass on his night vision, but Volk's been like, hey, as soon as we've gone over something or I've given you some notice of something, he catches on pretty dang quick.
Yeah, he's really able to put everything that he's learned into practice, which I think is the key to being exceptional, because there's going to be so much information coming at him. So being able to take that and learn from it is the fastest way to greatness. The last test that they do with the sparring is they actually want to test Volk's shield. It's made again with that world serpent scale, so they don't really know all the properties of it. So what Zelfry does is he mimics a will-o-wisp because they're so strong and frightening, and pushes a little bit of fire out, and the shield actually reflects that back at him. And I just picture this as like the mirror shield, or you know, the reflectors from like Super Smash Brothers.
Like it is straight up the mirror shield from Legend of Zelda. Imagine if it was something other than just Bluest magic, though.
Something powerful.
Wait, didn't we say that the Will-O-Wisp was so strong and powerful, though?
Yes. That's why they're the guards to the city. They give them the keys to the palace. And that brings us to Chapter 22, which is the Rules of Eldraine. Volk is making his way back to the inn. He's shadow stepping because he can, and it's dark outside, and he shadow steps up to the roof of the inn and overhears Zaxxas practicing. Not sparring, not his skills, but he's practicing talking to Ilya. And Volk ends up unable to contain himself. He laughs. He gives himself away. He has a discussion with Zaxxas and ends up asking for his advice. And Volk tells him to really just be honest with her and compliment her on something that he actually enjoys. Perfect timing. Ilya does show up and Zaxxas asks to speak to her alone. They make their way off. So we'll see later on what comes from that discussion. Volk, again, continuing his learning, he goes to Thiessen's book to learn about the Eldraine that he's already sort of familiar with. So phoenixes, he learns that there's actually a blue phoenix, which is almost a separate species. It's still a phoenix, but it has especially strong fire that's supposed to be able to burn creatures that are immune to fire, and it doesn't actually heal the way other phoenixes do. So it's sort of the same skill set, still a phoenix, but slightly tweaked on to the offensive side.
Like, that's so cool that the blue phoenixes can actually burn other creatures that are immune to fire. Like, oh, you're a dragon and have fire? Cool story, bro. I'm a blue phoenix, Arcanus. I can burn you.
It is a little cheat code.
Right? Imagine Zaxxas going against a blue phoenix, Arcanus, and actually not being able to withstand the heat.
And he wouldn't know ahead of time either, so he'd walk into it and just be getting lit up, literally.
And then true form phoenixes, it's brought up that they can potentially bring back recently deceased. And one thing I've always wondered, what is defined as recently? Like, is it a couple of days ago? Is it a couple of weeks ago? Are we talking recent in, you know, retrospective of Arcanus, where like a couple of years is recent still?
It's a good question. I think especially with the true form, there's a lot of questions around what falls into each category.
This is one of those just burning questions that I don't think we're ever going to, I don't really want an answer to, but it's that, like, just how far does it go?
That little piece of lore that you're looking for.
Exactly. Now, Volk is reading along and he does find the entry for Nightmares, and he does confirm that they are tier 3. And Luthair is like, yeah, I wasn't worried about that whatsoever. I knew that already.
He knew he was powerful. Zaxxas, at this point, ends up coming back into the room, and Volk pretends to be asleep. I don't think he wants to know what's going on with that conversation or deal with Zaxxas if it didn't go well. But in the morning, Ilya enters into the room and wakes Volk up and wants to go shopping with him. And she wants to go shopping in the Moonlight District.
So I got to admit, the first couple of times that I've read that, finally I read it correctly, because I kept reading that Volk wanted to go to the Moonlight District to go shopping. And I was kind of like, I mean, he knows what this district is about. Luthair tells him what this district is about. The first couple of times that I read it, I'm just sitting there thinking like, Volk, this is not a place that you really should, not saying he shouldn't be allowed to go to, but this is not in his character to go to this kind of area. And then finally I read it and I was like, oh, Ilya wanted to go to this district. That makes more sense. Like, I know Volk wouldn't necessarily say no to going there, but I wouldn't think he would volunteer to go there.
No, that's funny. Like you say, that's very out of character for him, but I would love to see Ilya come and be like, let's go shopping. He goes, can we go to the Moonlight District?
Be like, I know that he kind of like accidentally wandered into there when he was released from the jail, with Luthair being there like, hey, this is not the most honorable place to be. I think that was enough of Volk like, I think I should probably steer away from this. But he was, you know, it piqued his interest. He's like, but I do kind of want to go there.
Maybe just for a little bit, you know, we'll just check it out.
Just take a peek, you know, nothing too long. Just take a look.
You know what? I'll bring a few coins with me, you know, if something spots me.
There are tailors and stuff there, right?
Yes, there's very honorable things you could be doing there. All right. That brings us to chapter 23, I Dance. So this is where we find out through a discussion between Volk and Ilya that Zelfrey actually joined the guild out of love, not out of a desire for adventure or to right the wrongs in the world, but he did it for love.
Aww.
I know, so sweet. Volk and Ilya make their way into the Moonlight District. It's very festive. It's very revealing. Ilya mentions the conversation with Zaxxas, and she says that she would think about his offer. And that just does inspire confidence if you're Zaxxas. Well, I'll think about it.
Hey, what would you have done if your previous girlfriend or even your wife, like, if they'd have been like, let me think about it?
It would put a lot of stress on me. It'd be tough.
Yeah, I'd be sitting there sweating.
And in this conversation, Ilya almost seems like she's gauging Volk's reaction to the news. She seems to be trying to figure out, does he approve of it? Would this be okay with him? Would this bother him? And that's either telling of her feelings towards Volk or towards their relationship that she is so concerned with his reaction to it.
I wonder if this was her trying to decide if Volk was going to become anything more than friends, like that kind of the final nail in the coffin, but kind of seeing that, is Volk going to step up and say, hey, look, actually, I've got feelings for you more than just siblings. Can we move on from this? Got to make a contest between the two. I think that's what she was trying to see with Volk, as far as asking him what his opinions were about it, to make sure that it kind of closes things and she gets that closure with Volk. It
would make a lot of sense. Like you said, she's kind of at this tipping point where if she goes to Zaxxas and then goes back to Volk, there's a whole bunch of
social tension.
Yes. Drama. The other part of this whole conversation that is, I just found extremely funny, is Nicolin actually calls Zaxxas high maintenance, which fits really well and is just funny to think about. Yes, the truth comes out. They kind of close up the conversation, but Ilya's again leaning towards Zaxxas and says that she does want to dress fancy for him. It's not really her usual style, but she's trying to find a good fit. And that's why she wanted to come to the Moonlight District, is because they would have something a little more festive to use. So while she's getting her dress tailored and fit and picking out everything, Volk actually goes awkwardly walking around the district. He ends up getting approached by somebody who offers him a special show just for an arcanist. And I don't think Volk understands what that means.
And I want to note out the way that this guy looks, because he's wearing a coat that's a size too small. He's wearing a top hat that's a size too big. A purple ascot, has the face of a baby and a body of a 40-year-old alcoholic. So he's got a big old beer belly.
Seems like someone I would trust.
Right. Like, I feel like this is like Pinocchio all over again.
Yes. And I think Volk just has this confidence with Luthair of, oh, I can handle anything. Like, so what if this does end up being a bad dude? We'll just merge and I'll break out my sword and we'll be good to go. So I think he has that little extra confidence that he probably shouldn't have.
Well, not to mention just the pure naivety of him.
Yeah, he goes into the show and it's starring a singer dancer named Karna. And the way it's described, it's very burlesque-esque show. So I am sure Volk, in his naivete, was wonderstruck.
I would imagine when she comes over during the show, he's probably just like,
did she pick me?
Oh my gosh.
Did she see me? And she does come over and she steals his guild pendant and his Wendigo trinket as, you know, part of the show, takes him off in the dancing and then slinks away with them.
And that walks us into chapter 24, Invitation. Didn't Zelfrey say something about the whole not taking the Wendigo trinket off at all? Like, for anything or any reason.
It doesn't seem like he'd want to lose the guild pendant either. Like, there's no way he should have let her take those.
Right. Like, of all things, like, Volk, these are the two things that you really can't replace. I imagine you could probably get another guild pendant. The guild's probably not going to be very happy about it. And they're probably going to make fun of you and make you work at it to get it back. But let's not let the singer / dancer, Karna, walk off with your trinket that keeps you from getting the plague.
the most dangerous thing out there right now.
So finally, Volk notices that she didn't have a Arcanist mark on her forehead. And he basically is told, hey, come back to my room when the show is over and I'll give you this stuff back. So he goes back into the room because obviously he needs to get his trinket back, at the very least, the trinket. And he goes back there. He sees the guards. They see him and they're like, oh, yep. Let him go. Like he's supposed to be back here. It's a very small room, quite cozy. She's talking to him about the tournament and how he must be competing because of being a nightmare. I'm not sure if she realized he was a nightmare yet, but she just sees him as an Arcanist competing in the tournament. He's not from the area. And she talks about wanting to attend the gala. Volk, in his, again, his naivety of this kind of situation, was like, well, yeah, you'd be a really good songstress. I imagine the queen would have no problem listening to you sing.
And he says this, one, with the naivete of what the song and dance are for, and two, as if he's some skilled songstress evaluator. He doesn't hang out in bars. He doesn't go to taverns. He grew up on a small island. This might be like the second or third person he's ever heard do a performance.
What's the guy from American Idol?
Simon
Cowell. So she's talking to him and she's like, I don't want to attend it as a worker. I want to attend it as a guest. It's kind of been my dream. I just want to meet the queen and that'd be so amazing. To add on top of it, she offers to meet all his expectations, if you know what she means. And this is where Volk's honor kind of comes back. He's naive as hell about this, but
he actually picked this one up.
Yeah, he's like actually disgusted with this, and he has very high morals. And good job, Gravekeeper William, for teaching him that. And Volk falls back on that a lot in this section because he's constantly thinking, what would Gravekeeper William be doing? How would he react in this situation? He wouldn't force her to do anything to take her to this ball. It's not going to cost him anything. So Volk asks her if she wants to attend the gala with him, and there's going to be no strings attached.
And I was surprised she went along with this so excitedly. I mean, it's the best situation for her, but I feel like I would be at least a little suspicious of why does he not want any of his expectations met?
When she doesn't know him from anybody. She doesn't know other than the Frith Guild pendant, and we don't know if she knew who the Frith Guild is. I mean, shoot, the Duke could be an axe murderer at this point. Like
that might be his expectation, is you in a coffin.
Exactly. Like, I don't give a crap. I don't need you alive. So in order to get her to kind of calm down and understand how serious he's being with this, that he wants her to attend with him, he gives her his guild pendant as proof of this. And it tells her where exactly the hotel is and that he'll see her on the night of, so that way they can go to the gala together. On the plus side, at least Volk gets his trinket back. Okay. Of all the things, at least he gets his trinket back. Like
the main important thing he needs.
Right. Like, I mean, you couldn't imagine Volk handing over his shadow sword or anything else above. I would hand a sword over before that trinket. Like
probably. There's other ways to kill people. So.
Right.
He's got the shield.
You can make another sword.
The other thing that comes out at the end of this that just makes the whole situation so much better is Fane is actually following Volk throughout this whole thing. He stayed invisible. And he explains to Volk that he did this because he didn't want to hurt his chances with Karna. So Fane also has this whole situation to use as leverage down the road if he wants. He thinks it's hilarious. He doesn't understand it. He came from the lifestyle of a pirate, which is obviously would have gotten his expectations met, to say the least. So it's a very different lifestyle. And I think as he's trying to learn more about how to be a good person, this situation is a funny one for him to be in.
Fane's used to take what you can get when you can get it. Volk's just like, nah, I'm good, bro. At least Fane picked Volk, of all people, to shadow. If he would have picked Hexa, there's no way in hell she would she would be displaying a very good person.
No, there's a lot of subject twos with, I think, the rest of the guild.
Oh, absolutely. So you know what? It's probably a really good thing he did pick Volk in this. The other part is, wait, I would be like, wait a minute. So you saw that whole thing? Like, her leaning up on me and doing the whole, you know, happy birthday, Mr. President. You know?
Fane's over there in the corner. Someone likes to watch.
So let's lead this into chapter 25. Everett Zelfry, the Faceless Renegade. And Volk makes it back to the tailor shop that Ilya was getting her dress fitted at. He goes in, leaving Fane outside. And he planned this. And he says that Ilya looks absolutely beautiful. And one of the designs that she points out to him was that she had star moss fixed into the dress.
And I was very curious with this because Volk wasn't gone for that long. A couple of hours, probably, when it's all said and done. So did they have a star moth dress? Or is there, you know, Eldrin that somehow lets you create and weave material and fabric that they can make one in such a short time? So I was very curious on the logistics of that transaction.
I believe that it said that they had brownies working in the shop, which were essentially like cobblers that had elves that were working after night, but they're actual Eldrin in the shop to help with the dresses. So I believe, yes.
That makes more sense.
Right. Because just a couple hours, you can only imagine how much work they would have to do in that time.
Yes.
Volk says to Ilya, as basically the nail in the coffin of "you look stunning," is William would be proud.
It's a sweet moment. It is, like you say, the pushing over the edge, I would say. But very much, I think it does kind of solidify the ways that they're going to go separately and that, you know, Ilya's pursuing the right path with this dress.
They leave the shop and Ilya is not happy that Volk has invited Fane to accompany them back to the hotel. And that, unfortunately, this is very quickly realized that this was a bad idea. And one of the most awkward moments for Volk, because they are just dead silent the entire time.
And this is another naive moment for Volk that he didn't put together the, you know, her biggest goal, her biggest focus is always Callisto. And Fane is now somebody that she's supposed to get along with, but who was ties to Callisto. And it just feels like he missed the ball on that one.
Right. Good intentions. So Volk suggests that Fane talks to Zelfry for training because Fane hasn't ever received any formal training as an arcanist. And Volk asked Fane, "Hey, are you going to even compete in the tournament?" And he's like, "I'd be in the journeyman class because of how long I've been bonded, but really don't know how to use my magic other than what I've done, the little bit that I have done."
Yeah, his only real training, and that's probably a stretch of a term for it, is just what they practiced on the boat, which I think was more some rough and ready sparring rather than any true pointers or teaching or perfecting.
Yeah, it's probably just the, okay, you can turn invisible. Turn invisible. You don't have to fight.
Use your ice. There you go. It's cold now.
So this is where we find out that Fane absolutely hates Zelfry with a passion. So Fane believes that Zelfry is a renegade pirate that turned his back on all other pirates. So now it's not because Fane doesn't like Zelfry. It's because Zelfry was a pirate and then is no longer a pirate, so he defected. But Fane defected too, so kind of not sure where the upsetness here comes in here. Fane has heard apparently a lot about Zelfry as a pirate, and he said that Zelfry and Callisto were actually really good friends. And Fane pleads to not be able to be left alone with Zelfry for fear of his own life.
And he even mentions that when Zelfry turned himself over to Callisto, it was almost more of a joyous situation than a hostage situation. They were happy to see each other and celebrating before they started torturing him.
And then once we finally get back to the hotel, Zelfry is there and Fane instantly goes invisible. Zelfry grabs Volk and they are on their way to go see Thiessen. And this is where chapter 25 ends off. We're going to jump into our bestiary section. And like we mentioned in the previous episodes with the bestiary section, we're not going to go over every single Eldrin that we come across in the section. So we're going to kind of go back to the last few chapters and start with the Anansi. And the mythology of it comes from Africa by the Ashanti people of Ghana. This mostly appears as a spider or a spider with human head or kind of a bunch of different mixes of those. And some of its titles are the King of Stories, the Trickster, the Joke Maker, the Bringer of Knowledge and Wisdom. The Trial of Worth is unknown, but we do know this is a tier 1 mystical creature, so fairly low on that totem pole, and it is progeny born. We know that the evocation is weaving silk threads that cause those trapped in them to fall into a comatose, like state while viewing illusions. When we were talking about the Arcanist, or the person that was bonded to the Anansi before it got killed, it makes a lot of sense why the Anansi convinced him essentially to go steal mystical creatures to feed her, because that's what this mystical creature is about.
The other one we're going to cover is the Reaper. So the Reaper and Reaper, Grim Reaper, this is another kind of tiered cauldron. So it actually comes from the 14th century during the Black Death. And those who survived came up with this image of a skeleton, black flowing robes, and then the iconic scythe that goes with it. Skeleton is obviously related to the death portion, but the black robes were commonly worn for funerals, and scythe was used to depict the harvesting of the humans, killing them and gathering them. It is one of the more violent ones. So its trial of worth is you have to kill a blood relative. However that goes about works, but it has to be a blood relative that you're killing. Its tier is actually anywhere from 1 through 4. So all the way up to that dragon tier. And it's fable born. So it's born when the blood of 1,000 people is spilled across 1 acre. So very, very tied in with death. The evocation is very similar to nightmares with the terrors that inflicts. It actually can manipulate blood. So instead of shadows stepping from shadow to shadow, it can step through blood from one point to another. And it has quite a few different passive abilities. So it's actually immune to terrors, which makes sense because it is one of its powers. And it has something called the King's Revenge, which anybody who deals the final blow, who actually kills a Reaper or a Grim Reaper, they die immediately. So it's one for one. So if you want to take it out, you have to be willing to risk your own life. It also has a very strong aura known as an anemia aura. So this prevents healing. So old wounds will actually start to open up, causing enemies to bleed out. The special power of Arcanus to heal quickly is greatly reduced, and any blood that starts to pour out of these wounds again goes back into the Reaper's power of manipulation. And we do actually have a true form of this. The scythe becomes very intricate, and the chains transform into ghostly lanterns that cloak and emanate abyssal magic.
So that everybody knows, we have the Orthos and the Barghest as well. Again, those will be coming up in a later episode. We'll keep track of all the other ones that we're going to be going over, but again, too many to go over one time. And we do thank you all for listening. Just want to remind everybody that we post our new episodes every Wednesday morning around 11 Eastern, 10 o'clock Central, and for those that are out in Pacific, 8 o'clock Pacific Standard. We're on all podcasting platforms, and if you haven't already switched over to YouTube Music, then you definitely need to get that done, because Google Podcasts is going to no longer be a thing. We are on YouTube as well for video, and we want to thank our editor Dan Mackison for including pictures and links to everything. If you do want to reach out to us on Gmail, we're at frithguildpod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and other social medias at Frith Guild Podcast. Again, we want to thank the Frith Chronicles Wiki, as that is a great resource. And again, everything is linked down below for the podcast and in YouTube. And I want to remind everybody that we don't have a solid date quite yet for the Urban Fantasy, the time-marked Warlock yet for Shammy Stovall. But again, once we get updates, we will certainly include that as well. Scott, was there anything else you'd like to add tonight?
No, I think that closes it.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.